Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
In the house, David Beauclair from the Nashville Post. I don't know if he's eligible or not, but he is presented by the Tennessee Lottery. David, what's going on this morning?
I know a lot of people are excited about the NHL playoffs and all.
Yeah.
But the preseason NFL schedule is out.
Right.
That's got me fired up.
All right, let's go game by
That's
game.
Big time. Actually, there actually is an element of news in the Titans preseason schedule. Are you aware?
With the scrimmage?
In the franchise history, Oilers, Titans all told, they have played the Pittsburgh Steelers more than any other team. But they have never played the Steelers in the preseason.
I did think that was interesting. They're
played
playing
them,
the Steelers.
I didn't remember them 77 times in the regular season, which is second only to Cincinnati. They've got 78 regular season meetings with Cincinnati, plus four in the playoffs, whereas they've only played Cincinnati in the playoffs once. But never have they played Pittsburgh in the preseason. So that, my friends, is going to be a huge game. Get ready for that.
And plus, it's not just any week of the preseason. It's week three of the preseason.
It's the week three game.
Whoa.
That's right.
The biggest of all.
That's right.
Whoa. The return of the Munchak.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, too.
Yeah, I got you.
There's so many interesting elements in this game. You can't even know.
Yeah. But it is. I actually looked. There's the only other teams that Titans have never played in the preseason are Baltimore, which was obviously a previous division rival, and then Jacksonville and Houston. So,
They won't ever play those teams.
Yeah, exactly. Right. As long as you got the current alignment. So, if you're looking for something, that's a little something about the NFL preseason schedule.
They played Green Bay a lot in the preseason, though,
and Minnesota. Yeah, they you know Minnesota this is too. This will be like five times in 8 years for Minnesota. They've had on there so.
It always rains when they play Green Bay.
It always and not just a little. It's not just wet.
You're
like
right.
it's a soaker, man.
Do we play them there this time?
Yeah, I'll be
like,
though.
But that was even up there. There was the one time that it was
long
delayed.
Goal.
Yeah,
was that a preseason?
That was a preseason. Wasn't that Kerry Collins' first game? Wasn't that 2006? I think
somewhere
maybe?
In that range. Yeah.
I think that was right after they had signed Kerry Collins and he was going to play in that game maybe. It was right around then. But, yeah, it's funny. I was listening to your conversation about Mariota and Winston last hour, too. And
what you
and
think?
Three years in, it's funny. If you think about it, the biggest questions about each of those guys coming into the league are still the biggest questions about them. You know, like with Winston, it was he's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's talented, he's all these things. But he's a knucklehead, and is he mature enough? Is he, you know, can he be an NFL quarterback? And, you know, you were saying the same sorts of things. And with Marcus, it's can he operate in the pocket? Can he run a pro style offense and make all the reads and all the throws? And after the interceptions last year, that's kind of what people are still asking about Marcus. It's almost like they've been crossing the little things off their list, but the big issues still remain right now in terms of just how good these guys are and what they can do for their franchises long term.
But yeah, that's out there. Titans preseason schedule. They announced them for all the teams in the league yesterday. What did you think about, I guess, as long as we're on the Titans, how'd you feel about Vrabel's comments to kind of get the offseason program kicked off the other day?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I saw
you over there.
I was there. Of course I was there. He's comfortable in front of the microphone, but he's still trying to feel like, to me, he's up there in the back of his mind while he's talking, he's going, what am I supposed to say here? You know, I always laughed at Jeff Fisher. Like Jeff Fisher was so good at a press conference and deciding just how much he was going to give you and how much he wasn't going to give you. And Vrabel, I think right now is erring on the side of trying to be accommodating and helpful. But you get the sense that when the season rolls around and there's, you know, there's wins and losses at stakes and whatnot, that he's going to be far less.
He's going to go hoodie on
us. Forth. Yeah, he's going to really dial it down. You know, he's got a certain amount of paranoia that I think really will it'll expand as
what will make you say that but, though?
Well, there was the moment in the press conference where somebody asked a question about how the team room had been redecorated, and he saw them with their phone, like he was being videoed, and they aimed their camera or their phone at a little inspirational saying on the wall, and he caught that, and he's like, now I want to talk about this. Is anybody gonna, you know, when you get into the locker room in the season, I don't want people videotaping or taking pictures of guys' lockers, or they, you know, like it was really just, it had nothing to do with nothing, what anybody right. was talking about. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of, you know, I don't know what he thinks.
It's almost like he wanted to make that point and found that as an excuse.
But it struck him at that moment, uh-huh. clearly when you know, that it was just sort of an odd thing, and it wasn't fun, like it wasn't uncomfortable, it wasn't, uh-huh. you know, but it was just weird, and that's why I said there's, you know, that's where you can see he's already.
He said this locker room was a sacred place. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, he's already developing a healthy distrust of the media, and you know, once we, like, when we get into games and people are asking, you know, say Blaine Bishop missed three tackles on mm-hmm. Saturday, right. you know, or, you know, what was going on there? Like, I can see where that's going to really sort of unnerve him. Or I could see where that would, you know, where it's funny, like Jeff Fisher was great at sort of defending his players. We go, no, Blaine actually did everything right on those plays. And, you know, he would just kind of play it off. Mike Mularkey was actually really good at that. You know, Mike Munchak was terrible at it. Ken Wisenhunt, of course, nothing ever went wrong. Ken Wisenhunt would say, I don't know what you're talking about. Blaine wasn't on the field on those plays. Like, he was going to make up something, you know? And,
I don't know any Blaine Bishop.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how Vrabel handles that, because I think when things aren't going well, that he'll go
hoodie on us.
I think he's really gonna dial it, you know, tighten the reins, and he'll be far less interesting at that point.
Well, Predators and Colorado Avalanche in about 13 hours down the road here on Broadway, game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Preds. David, it's an interesting sort of contrast between last year and this year. You barely make it in last year and go from there. This year, expectations are a whole lot different, where it feels like if they don't win the Stanley Cup, it's going to be, I hate to say it's going to be a failure, but yeah, that's kind of how it feels.
That's exactly how it feels. I wrote this week. It feels very much to me like the 2000 Titans. It, you know, you come so close in 99, and Blaine, you can speak to this. It felt like the 2000 season there to me was a continuation of, not like, it's almost like guys picked up after the playoffs in 99, said, okay, let's, you know, we're getting back there, we're going to do this again. And, you know, to remind everybody, Titans finished the 2000 regular season with the best record in the NFL at 13-3. They rolled through that year. It was like, you know, there was sort of this, let's just get back to the playoffs and do that again, much like has been the case with the Predators this year, who, oh, by the way, finished with the best record in the regular league or in the regular season, and here we go again. The problem the Titans had, of course, was the Baltimore Ravens, who then showed up, and the Ravens had spoiled a bunch of things for this franchise over the years. With the Predators, who's their Baltimore Ravens? I don't know that they have one.
It could be Winnipeg.
Well, but Winnipeg hasn't been a sport. My point is, you know,
there's no history there.
Yeah, Baltimore had come in, and they were the first mm-hmm. visiting team to win at the stadium here. Even in 99, they were the last team to beat you guys in the regular season. History. They beat you like a drum. Mm-hmm. Remember that one? It was 41.
Remember that.
It was 41-14. I'll remind you. Yeah. And there was, you know, that was the 12th game of the season, and there was talk of that point of, God, can the Titans recover from that? No, obviously you did, no problem. But, you know, Baltimore had long been a thorn. You could say maybe Chicago was Nashville's.
What, Buffalo was the thorn Sabres.
Well, you know, but, you know, Chicago after last year is not a problem anymore, and they're not even in the playoffs. Maybe then San Jose. San Jose is the only team Nashville has played multiple times in the postseason and never won a series, never won a playoff series against. But, you know, your only chance to see them is in the conference finals, so you can win a couple there. I mean, obviously anything can happen, but there's not that obvious spoiler out there for the Predators where you're saying, oh, I just don't want to play them. To your original point, Kevin, yeah, you feel like this team needs to be back in the Stanley Cup final and win it this time.
What's scary is not only does everybody pick them to roll over Colorado, which is understandable, they've beaten them 10 times in a row, but just how it's like running at 80 or 90% of the experts are picking them to win the cup. And we know what a tough undertaking that is. I watched Winnipeg last night, and, you know, they're pretty amazing. I mean, now totally healthy now. They're dangerous. You know, Minnesota played really well last night, and still Winnipeg found a way to win. The Preds don't have a player like Laine, even though Philip Forsberg is really good. But conversely, interesting article on ESPN.com, because, you know, one of the things I've said is that the Preds don't have a quote-unquote superstar. They don't have a Connor McDavid. They don't have a Sidney Crosby. They don't have a Patrick Laine. They don't have somebody, you know, putting up huge numbers statistically. But the article pointed out that the Preds are more of an outlier for the President's Trophy than the Stanley Cup. The Predators are the first team in the 3-plus decade history of the President's Cup not to have a 70-point scorer. So that's pretty interesting. Since 1986, five teams have won the Stanley Cup without a 70-point scorer. The Preds' top scorer, I believe, was Victor Arvidsson, was 61. But, again, the Predators don't have that huge point producer, but they've got a lot of depth. They've got a great defensive core. ESPN.com, again, ranked, you know, all three aspects of a team, and the Predators had the top goaltender in Pekka Rinne, and they also had the top defensive core, and they had, like, the third-best forward group. So that's pretty impressive across the board.
I've heard that increasingly as the playoffs have been approaching, you know, well, yeah, but they don't have a great score. Well, yeah, they haven't had a bona fide number one scorer all year. This is how they play. This is how they've beaten teams. I don't think in this case that's a problem. You can't say they fluked their way into the playoffs or anything like that. I mean, it's just this is how the Predators do it. I will say I wrote this last year. I recall it since the lockout that canceled the 2004-05 season. Every team except one that has won the Stanley Cup has had at least a number one overall draft pick or a number two overall draft pick. In a lot of cases, they've got like two guys who were top five overall picks, because it's teams that are bad enough to get great talent that win. And, and certainly Pittsburgh fits that mold with Crosby and Malkin. The Preds don't have that.
And that's more to me a tribute to David Poile and Paul Fenton than anything else, that they've never been the beneficiaries of having that franchise player just come to them, you know, one year in the draft, you know, that Connor McDavid, even a Jack Eichel, and you look around the league and see other teams. It's like next year, somebody really wants to stink because this Hughes kid is supposed to be like the next Gretzky. So, we'll see how that shakes out.
Well, there's the defenseman out of Sweden who's apparently a game changer for this year. Yeah, there's always one or two of these guys every year that are uh, that are coming in the league, and it seems to be if you're quote unquote fortunate enough to be bad enough to get them, then it changes things around. And certainly Colorado's a team that fits that bill with Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog. Colorado, this is only their third playoff appearance in 10 years, and they haven't won a series in their last two appearances. So
about how odd, though, Bokey, that Matt Duchene trade is.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Duchene badly wants to get off of Colorado. You know, they were the worst team in hockey last year. You know, he was a disruptive force, you know, from the year before, from last year. A lot of people thought he just mailed it in. And then he gets traded to Ottawa, and essentially the only player right now playing on Colorado from that deal, they got a lot of young players and draft picks, is Samuel Girard. And Colorado has the biggest turnaround in the league this year, and Ottawa becomes, you know, a totally cratered team that's going to have to rebuild and get blown up. So, sorry, Matt Duchene.
Be careful what you wish
for. Yeah, you're on the wrong horse.
Well, back to the Preds. I guess first of all, I have two little I guess irritating things about the time of the game. How does that go about? How does that process? Yeah, how does that work?
Get your 5-hour energy shot ready.
Because, no. Well, Mark better get his ready.
Halfway
through.
This is part of the issue with Nashville being in the Western Conference. You know, this is all about NBC Sports Network doubleheaders, and you know, one game at 6 o'clock, one game starting at 8:30, and at least Central Time. And so here you go. We've got an 8:30. We're all fortunate that NBC picked up Saturday's game and dropped it in the afternoon for us. So, but we're gonna get more of these as long as, you know, until you get to the conference finals.
Looking down the road, let's say 10 years down the road with expansion and everything else, do you feel like then there's a possibility that the Preds could then not be in the West, or are the rivalries set and that it's really kind of hard to change that?
I mean, I guess if you get to 34 teams, mm-hmm. and there's two more, you know, out in the Mountain Time Zone or the Pacific Time Zone, then yeah, theoretically Nashville, because Nashville is the farthest east team,
right,
that is in the West. So if you get to that point, but you know, the next step is adding Seattle, which is going to get us back to balance and 16 teams in each conference, so Nashville's not going anywhere from there.
Here's how things have changed. You know, it used to be that the thought of moving Nashville to the East would get a collective ho-hum around the league. And I think it was Emily Kaplan from ESPN.com had this realignment story where the Predators were moved to the East, and she broached it to some of the Chicago Blackhawks. And Patrick Kane goes, I would hate that. He goes, we have a great rivalry now with Nashville. I'd hate to lose Nashville. And I'm mm-hmm. like, wow. They're singing a different tune these days.
They have a lot of good places to drink down there.
Exactly. I know. Yeah, that's true, too. Bokey, the other part of this matchup, the Predators led the league in penalty minutes per game with 11 minutes and 19 seconds. And we had our good friend Terry Crisp on yesterday. And I reminded him that some of his Flyers teams averaged 23 minutes in penalties a game, but that was a different era. But still, the one edge, if Colorado has any edge, is in special teams. Both their penalty kill and power play are ranked a little bit higher than the Predators. So what about this aspect of the series?
I mean, you said it. Nashville led the NHL in penalties with 372. The next among the playoff teams was Anaheim with 346. The flip side of that is no team had more power plays during the regular season than Colorado. At Colorado, would they have 296 power plays? So it's easy to see where this thing could go off the rails for Nashville. If it's going to do so at all, it's Nashville, a parade of players to the penalty box. You give Colorado too many opportunities on the power play. That's going to be an easy way for Colorado to overcome whatever roster deficiencies, whatever playoff experience deficiencies, whatever the other differences are in this series. they can be wiped away if Nashville can't stay out of the penalty box. The flip side of that is Nashville was pretty good at getting power plays in its own right, but Nashville, more than any other team, sort of piled opportunities on top of one another. Nashville led the NHL with 19 5-on-3 opportunities this year. Nobody else in the league had more, or nobody else who made the playoffs, excuse me, had more than 12. So that's where Nashville can sort of break, you know, Colorado's back or anybody else's, is when they really get moving and they get teams so far off balance that the penalties pile up on one another. That's, you know, what we saw the last couple weeks of the regular season is referees sort of swallowing their whistles a lot more. So I think if you're the Predators, you tell the referees, yeah, keep that up. We like that. You know, we're happy with that. But they just can't be going to the box all the time. It's because Colorado has the guys who can score on the power play.
The other part of this is, and you know, we've all chewed on this a little bit. One of the other differences between last year's team and this year's team is that UC Saros played really well against good teams this year. You know, he wasn't just the guy who played the second half of the back-to-backs. And they threw him in against some of the best teams in the league, and he excelled. Now, obviously, he's only in if Pekka gets hurt or doesn't play well. But still, to me, that's another sort of significant plus on Nashville's side.
Yeah, I mean, look, UC Saros' job was to get Pecorini to the playoffs feeling rested and good. He did that. Now his job is to sit there in a ball cap and do an in-game interview with the local TV broadcast crew every
but also
every
be game. Ready.
Yeah, I mean, be ready. But that, you know.
So you don't think he's going to play at all?
I mean, no. There's no, I mean, unless, I think we had talked about this last week, unless Pekka has a couple of colossally bad performances in a row. But, it's nice to know he's there and can play well if you need him to play. You know, God forbid Pekka gets hurt. But, no, I mean, UC Saros' job is to sit there and to be there in practice so that Pekka doesn't have to face all the pucks in practice. It's that simple.
What would be your approach if they were up 3-0 against the Avalanche?
You put Pekka in there and you close out, so you win the series.
Give rest that way.
Yeah, especially in that case, if you're up 3-0, you close it out in four games and you get him his rest that way. This series feels to me, does it not feel to you, and Kevin, back to your original point about, you know, sort of what's at stake for the Predators, it feels very much like the reversal of Nashville's first playoff appearance, where, you know, Detroit was clearly a Stanley Cup contender. Now, Nashville hadn't won a couple of cups, mm-hmm. but, you know, Detroit was and Nashville, first time in there, had, you know, went down to the next last day of the regular season before they clinched and everything. And those were really good games. Recall, that was a 6-game series, and they were all really good competitive games. And at one point, the series was 2-2, but you never felt like Nashville was going to win that series.
Yeah, even like when they got tied, yeah, he's you, like,
you,
oh, Detroit's going
to. Never gonna, felt it. And yeah. That's that. To me, that's what this series feels like. I think Colorado's going to play well. I think the games are going to be really exciting and interesting. And it's not going to be a cakewalk in the sense that, you know, Nashville's not going to win 7-0. I don't think like Pittsburgh did last night over Philadelphia. It's hard to see a way that Nashville's not going to win this thing.
It's always a payoff when David Beauclair is with us.
Oh, aren't you kind?
Hey, I guess one more question for me. Yeah, with hockey, Boki, is that is the Predators, if they had one weakness, what would you say it is? Have you touched on it, or is it something that you say, well, when they match up with these teams, that this could be something that they can attack?
You know, this season, particularly the second half, they have been vulnerable to teams that really forecheck them hard. I think that's what, you know, that's what Colorado's going to have to try to do. They're going to risk giving up odd man rushes the other way to try and really beat on the defensemen, because Nashville's defensemen are kind of in a hurry to get the puck out and get the puck moving or skate it out or whatever. And so when teams forecheck them really hard and sort of pin them in their own end, they're prone to turnovers, and I think they get a little bit impatient, and I think that's something that in a team that skates as well as Colorado potentially can take advantage of some things that way. So I think but it is a risk, because those guys can make that first pass, or they can skate it out, and all of a sudden Nashville's got a 3-on-2, a 3-on-1, a 4-on-2, whatever it is, and they are pretty deadly in those situations. So it's a risk, but I don't think anybody's going to beat Nashville just by playing conservative. I mean, you're going to kind of have to go for broke and make it happen.
Well, I was going to go into the Titans. I don't know where you guys are, but how surprised were you that Steve Watterson retired? That was a kind of shocking. I mean, I know he's put in a lot of years, but I mean, maybe it was planned out, or I don't know. It just seems like he would be there, or he would have decided sooner than later.
And days before the start of the off-season training program, the question was asked of Mike Vrabel on Monday, and he just kind of said. It's what he didn't say. It sounds like, I tried to read between the lines, and if I had to guess, I think there was some sort of discussion between the two of them where it was, Steve, I'm very happy to have you be my strength and conditioning coach, but we do need to incorporate A or B or C or whatever into our program, and maybe after thinking about it for a while, it didn't jibe with Watterson's philosophy, and he just decided enough was enough. But, because he's one of those guys, I can't imagine him being retired. The guy can't sit still for 20 seconds. No, I mean, I don't necessarily buy that, well, I just decided it was time. I think he decided it was time that he doesn't work with this particular coaching staff. And he's probably worked with, five or six different coaching staffs in this organization. I mean, he's a guy who's always been able to adapt. But I think there's just something in what this group wants and what he wants to do that probably didn't align. And, it's probably good to move on at that point.
What do you think about the signing of Campanero as well as, I guess, Longan and Compton? I mean, I'm sure we talked about it a little bit, but, it seemed like these are all veteran. I don't know. I feel like they're insurance policies. I don't know. Maybe it's a little more to it.
It feels like, okay, these are things we're going to do in the draft, but if the draft doesn't fall our way, we've got ourselves protected. Now, Campanero, to me, is like a younger version of Eric Weems. Like, you look at him, you say that, okay, we had Eric Weems last year who returned a couple punts, returned a couple kicks for us, was one of our top.
But he can play receiver, though, Campanero, though.
Yeah, I mean, Weems theoretically could, too, but I mean, Campanero caught virtually no passes before last year. I mean, he's a guy who's 5'9" and has had injury problems.
What, so 17 or so, or
yeah, something. Yeah, like yeah. I mean, he can. So you say he's probably a little bit of a younger, better version of Eric Weems. A guy who's not going to be a difference maker, but the kind of guy you need on your team and in your locker room. Compton's a fascinating guy to me. Like, if you read about him, an undrafted guy out of Nebraska who right before his rookie training camp, he started reading about the laws of attraction and how you visualize things into you visualize your thoughts into reality. And I wrote about this. He had sat down with his iPad and wrote out goals, his immediate goals, his 1 year goal, his 5 year goals, and included, making his first million by the time he was 26 years old. It included being a starting linebacker for the Washington Redskins. And he said, virtually all of that came true. And, he's a guy who will probably tell you he's not as talented, physically speaking, as most guys playing his position in the NFL, but he is unrelenting in his pursuit of his goals. And seems like one of those guys, when you hear John Robinson talk all the time about he wants guys for whom football is important to them, like, that's all I kept hearing. Everything I was reading about Will Compton, that I just kept hearing that in my head, that this is a guy for whom football is really, really important.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is most of the guys that he signed, especially the guys in free agency, have been classic overachievers. Guys who came into the league undrafted, or, Deion Lewis, fifth-round pick, you know, guys who have been on the practice squad and fought their way up, you know, to carve out meaningful roles with their previous teams. And, you know, you're getting that in Butler. You're getting that in Compton and a couple of the other Blaine guys Gabbert. That he's bringing in.
Blaine Gabbert.
What's that?
Blaine Gabbert.
Okay, well, Blaine Gabbert's sort of the opposite.
Right, he's the only one, though, right?
Yeah.
Just wanted to say Blaine.
Thank you, Blaine.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for sinking my ship, Blaine.
I think his nickname's Woody also?
Probably not.
Woody Gabbert?
Yeah, Woody Gabbert. Yeah, I don't know. That didn't go together. Yeah, I don't know if Bulky likes Gabbert.
I'm not a huge fan.
See, I can tell. You just can't get the picture out of the Jacksonville that he's just horrible.
But you
cannot see what he did to us last year with Arizona. We got a pretty good defense now.
I know, like I've said on here, as I've watched him in his last two spots, he's a better athlete than I realized, and I like the fact that he's athletic, and you know, if all else fails, he can run and do something for you.
Or as a friend of mine said, there are a lot of mediocre quarterbacks out there, and Gabbert's one of them.
Yes. Right. That's true. There's only one David Beauclair. He joins us every Thursday morning here on the Wake Up.
All right. Well, happy playoffs. Yep. Happy playoffs, everybody. We'll get your naps in today.
Yeah, no Preds Nation.